Well, butter my biscuits, ladies and gentlemen. We are here. Don't Trust Andrew Mayne premieres this Monday on the A&E Network. That is January 13th. I mean, you're probably listening to this 50 years from now. If that's happening and we're all dead, then forget about it. But if you are listening to this within the months of January or February or possibly March, I have no idea how many weeks it runs, then you are going to be able to watch it. Otherwise, you can pick it up on iTunes the day after it airs. If you want more Andrew Mayne, and really, ladies and gentlemen, who doesn't, go to itricks.com/maniac. That is M-A-Y-N-I-A-C. That is Andrew's brand new podcast where he talks about the show and everything else Andrew Mayne. So, Don't Trust Andrew Mayne on A&E. That's Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 Central. And itricks.com/maniac, M-A-Y-N-I-A-C, is where you get the new podcast. And now, the show! Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. Joining us is Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Everything in the universe is great. Rainbows and sunshine, as far as I can see. And pollen.
Pollen? Why would you say pollen, Brian?
Because I can't breathe, sir. And that's the word for being unable to breathe.
Yeah, Brian, pollen yesterday, when I was talking to him on the phone, talked about both of his nostrils opening up and equated it to a Ray Bradbury story, which I immediately knew what he was talking about where the sun never comes out.
Now, I saw that thing on like a Showtime short, like in the early 80s.
It was like a PBS movie.
Okay.
Like Wonderworks, just as like Wikipedia that. And I remember that. I remember watching it in class or something. Because living in Oregon, I'm like, yeah, I can relate to this.
Man, finally, a short that speaks to my exactly. Problems.
Also joining us, Mr. Justin Robert Young.
It is very, very good to be here, friends. I'm excited to be with you on this here broadcast.
You pulled out the French honk. That's how excited you are.
Yes, the French honk, the most forbidden of all honks.
And I'm Andrew Mayne, and I say we get down to the weird, guys.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, but real quick, also a reminder that Don't Trust Andrew Mayne does debut within, certainly within 48 hours, close to 24 hours, Monday, January 13th, if you are downloading this as soon as we put it up. Otherwise, Mondays on A&E, go ahead and check it out. It should be on at 10 p.m. Set your DVRs accordingly and watch live if you can. I will be live streaming during the episode and tweeting about it. Andrew's going to be tweeting about it. It's going to be a fun time.
And Monday is A&E, 10 p.m., 9 central.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You like what you see? Just hit up AETV at reply on Twitter. Say something. If you don't, lie. Say you did.
Yeah, man.
Yes. If you're just support us. If you've liked the show, then do us a favor and just tell A&E that you think Andrew's very handsome and he is broadly appealing to all the demographics for which advertisers are interested.
In fact, started off as a male in the 18 to 24 demographic.
With an income between.
Yes.
You know, when you want to get a construction project done, you have to deal with a lot of things.
Yeah.
First, like the landowners, you know, you want to build a highway here, shopping mall, whatever. And maybe there's that holdout owner that doesn't want to give up the property, right?
James Land Cameron. Barons, I like to call them.
James Cameron did a documentary on exactly this problem called Avatar.
Speaking of which, did you see they just released the photo of the groundbreaking for the Avatar attraction at Disney Animal Kingdom?
No.
Oh, you got to see this photo because it's kind of funny. Let me type in Avatar groundbreaking. So they're building a huge Avatar theme park there, which is going to have, I guess, a whole river cruise, forest attractions, etc. So
doesn't that seem like a bad idea for a park whose purpose ostensibly is to educate people about the wonders of nature all around them, to just have a bunch of like made up critters all around? Kids are going to be all like, because like you got one kind of what looks like a made up critter in all the crazy dinosaurs. But that's cool because you're learning, you know, it's like we have good evidence that dinosaurs existed. But now the kids, I don't know. I feel like the kids are going to be like, everything's got six legs.
They have the Yeti roller coaster and everything. So there's already like a blending of the fantastical to what is otherwise an amazing zoo experience. You know, aside from some of the top zoos around the country, Animal Kingdom, especially that safari ride is really, really awesome. And you really get an awesome look at stuff. But this picture is flat out ridiculous. This is amazing.
It's the one with the 12-foot tall Navi hanging out with a bunch of people with cartoonishly blue gigantic shovels.
Yes. So just to explain, just to paint a word picture for everybody, it is Jake Sully from Avatar. He is with, I guess, the assortment of bigwigs and executives who are breaking ground officially on it. But as is tradition, you have the first shovel of dirt, you know, being torn up there. But the shovels, instead of being human shovels, are Na'vi shovels, and therefore gigantic, and everybody looks hilariously small, and they're very dorky. This is amazing.
And Jake Sully in his Avatar
form, yes.
Well, spoiler alert for those who haven't seen 2010's Avatar, you know, I guess his only form at this point.
Yeah. Now, as far as to what, you know, does it belong there or whatever? You know, the thing is, when they first were going to build Animal Kingdom, if you look at some of the benches when you walk in and you see this Animal Kingdom logo, in the middle is a dragon with wings.
Oh.
There was going to be a land, which was going to be a land of myth, where they were going to have mythical animals, et cetera. For some reason, they ended up not doing that, but they always wanted to do something that went into mythology or fantasy, animals that never existed outside of our imagination. And I think doing, you know, in Avatar, you know, Cameron is a self-taught, say, scientist. And he's a guy that is very, very actively involved in the sciences. This is the guy that went to the deepest part of the ocean in a submarine he helped to build. When he uses science in his movies, he's very conscious of when he makes a departure, when he comes up with unobtainium, you know, this anti-gravity metal. He knows this isn't real. You know, when he describes having, you know, a spaceship go from here to the moon of Na'vi, he knows that, listen, if you put something near light speed and send it into this planet, you know, that's a horribly dangerous way to try to send something around. He understands these things really, really. He's a very, very smart guy. As a writer, as a storyteller, he knows, okay, I will make this departure here and this departure there. But when he tries to do the science, he's conscious of doing the science, he does a great job of it. And I love the idea of, let's have a theme park that imagines what happens if you go to another world that's a very thought out world, that's very, very science based, that has its own entire idea of what its evolution is and its ecosystem, et cetera.
Well, and actually that's a good point, because especially in the run up before Avatar got launched, there was a lot of talk about how they developed an entire sensible, plausible ecosystem. And you'll notice all of the critters have a similar number of legs. Although there was some criticism, like the Na'vi were the only creatures that were four appendaged out of it. Like, how great that they paid enough attention to the science that a minor inconsistency of the main characters looking like they're from a different genus than the rest of the fauna could be a point of criticism.
And it wouldn't surprise me at some point if they're going to be doing like three more movies, that if Cameron addresses that, the reason why are they so humanoid, you know, and then you could get into some sort of, you know, ancestral architecture, whatever. So I see the idea, when in one place you have this fantastic zoo, it's a very real experience, but then you have this myth thing. But I do love the idea that, let's get kids excited about the idea of, what is it if you go into an alien planet? How alien would it be? And what could you expect?
It also seems like for the theme parks, this is kind of a new world. Like post Harry Potter at Universal Studios, you had J.K. Rowling get very hands-on and involved about some of the details and the experience, and you know, you have people like Cameron certainly that view themselves almost in that Walt Disney mold, that they want people to interact with their creations as they see them on a real stage. So I think it's got to be really, really rad.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the precedent sort of for that was like with Spielberg and Lucas, and Spielberg was heavily involved with Universal and then Studios, but then with Disney and developing attractions there, and then, you know, Lucas with Star Tours, and then, you know, Cameron when he did the T2 3D,
yeah,
which was, you know, an incredible 3D interactive experience. He went and shot a 3D film specifically for that, was, you know, kind of another sequel to Terminator 2, which...
Well, he also, you know, those 3D attractions, they all use the circular polarized lenses, which according, you know, again, I'm going back to this Wired article, like he wanted to create a 3D experience, but the entire nature of 3D was insufficient to do what he wanted to do, because it used to be that the polarized lenses, if you tilted your head 45 degrees in either direction, it screwed them up, whereas he developed the real 3D system that is now the standard for 3D in the movies, just so that he could eventually get around to telling that story with Avatar. And that's why he did the documentary where he went down to the Titanic in 3D. It was mm-hmm. at a bunch of IMAXs and stuff. Like, that dude was playing a long game, a decades-long game to get around to telling the Avatar story.
So what you're saying, he's a slacker.
Yeah. And we're better than him. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So back to this construction project.
Yes.
And Justin brought up Avatar, totally of his own decision, which actually kind of relates to this. When you're trying to build these construction projects, you have to deal with... It does. It really does.
No. I'm sorry. It was actually me, not Justin. Yeah, that's why we're giving you that look. But go ahead.
I'm sorry. Mr. Brian Brushwood brought up Avatar.
Yes. Which is like there's a reason that it's a the criticism is that it's cliche, because I guess this has happened once or twice in humanity's history.
Well, and guess what? It's ongoing. So now you've got this problem with it's a construction project they're trying to get going on. That's a road project, and you know, you normally have to deal with the usual things: landowners, you have to deal with permits, you have to deal with, you know, the locals. And in this situation, they have another problem they have to deal with. A group known as the Holdu folk, who are protesting the construction of a road, and you know, they're kind of, you know, retiring people, and so they have to have other people kind of, you know, go out there and sort of advocate on their behalf. And it's become quite an issue. Some people think it's kind of charming, but now it's become sort of elevated there. And you know, how do you proceed? You know, when you want to make everybody happy, you know?
Oh, my God. This is a good one because... Okay,
do you know
first
what
of all,
this is about?
No, I don't. But I love the setup already, because as you're saying, the locals... Or if you're talking about building a road and there's trouble with the locals and it's anything like the Avatar scenario, there are precious few true wildernesses left on planet Earth. You know, I think, like, my first thought was, like, Russian development, and then I thought... you know, Brazil, or wait, no, maybe down in Antarctica, and maybe they have to kill penguins to do it. Maybe it's under the sea or some nonsense. But then you bring up the fact that there's something curious about the folks who are protesting. You said they were retiring folks?
Well, people are more protesting on their behalf.
Okay. Yes, which all of a sudden throws everything out, because now I can picture a scenario in rural Ohio where someone's trying to build a road and they're protesting on behalf of the spirits of the fallen soldiers from some Civil War battle that happened on this location.
Not the main Civil War. Some Civil War. Not the Civil War.
The Great Ohio Civil War.
Yeah. It was actually the song Civil War by Guns N' Roses, where somebody was rocking too hard and died, and now they're protesting his memory.
Well, here the problem they have is in this landscape, they want to build a road which goes across what people say is an important habitat where these individuals live, and there's including a church that could be destroyed.
All right, so we're talking about a small civilization that obviously people have found a place for agency and advocacy and are now speaking up for. My first thought would be some sort of animal, but like maybe it was all these like snakes or something. Maybe it's all like a big nest of snakes, and it's like one of those snake Christianity.
Oh, like the snakes have their own church, Justin.
So, hey, listen, they certainly play a part.
I love
Tulsa Doom. I back up. Tulsa Doom now.
I love the fact that you call it Snake Christianity, which is, I believe, how they refer to themselves.
You know, we snake Christians just look at things a little different than you city folk.
Snake Christians, city folk just don't get it.
So there's been a court case.
They just play the cell phone game
to the Supreme Court of this place. And Friends, this environmental group that's trying to stop this, has even gone as far as bringing out hundreds of people to block bulldozers to stop this.
Hundreds of people?
Okay, mm-hmm. So we're talking about animals here.
I mean, are we? I don't believe we are. I think we're talking about like ghosts or, I mean, this is the Weird Things podcast, right? So it's like, I would say they are alleged entities that are being protected.
Really? No, I think it's like a big festival of marmots that, you know, everybody's trying to protect or something like that.
The Marmot Church.
Marmot Christians. City folk just don't get it. Oh, man. Okay, so let's zero in. It would help me if I knew what part of the world. This is an urban area or rural?
Rural.
And
it's Cleveland.
they're trying to build a bridge like through the Empire State Building, and they're protesting. Can you say which hemisphere it's in? Can you pick a hemisphere?
Northern
hemisphere.
I have a feeling that you were dead on with Russia or China. I'm feeling.
Is it Russia?
Yet.
Okay. Is it in China? Close. No. Is it close to China?
No.
Do you like Chinese food?
Yes.
You know that it's true.
Okay. So, it's not in Brazil, is it? It's not a rainforest thing.
That would not be the Northern Hemisphere.
The other Northern Hemisphere.
Your first thought was to cut off half the world. And then your next thought after the two that I say is something in the part that you cut out.
Is it Antarctica? Okay. Is it in the United States?
No.
Okay. That helps. All right. So, the things they're protecting, I assume they are not human, the indigenous population. Oh, shoot. Hold on. I'm seeing a smirk here. I hit on something. They were human?
You know, Brian, we all have our own ideas of origins and who we're related to and who we're not. And I don't really want to weigh in on that.
Okay. All right.
We're looking at a primate civilization.
Are we?
I would think that, again, you're getting into, you know,
it's fine.
I think that a zoologist would say definitely.
All right.
I would even say, as far as the human thing or whatever, I would say, you know, I would be hesitant to say no.
This
is it. Encino Man,
the one guy. Brendan Fraser. They're trying to build through his house. Do they? Hundreds. I can't get hundreds of people to go to a party that I'm throwing. Like, I'm trying to think of what would have the locals that fired up.
I could probably get 100 people to protest your party.
All right. And let's talk about the project.
I mean, they're all children of God, and you know, they're.
is the project a road?
Yes.
Okay.
And I just had some clarity now on them, so I would say human.
They're definitely human.
Yeah.
Oh,
ish.
God. Okay. The more you equivocate, the harder this gets. I don't know. Human ish.
Brian, let's lay down the facts.
All right.
Right?
Hold on. We got our detective hats. Put them on.
Let's lay down what we know now. It's not in Russia. It's not in China. A zoologist would say definitely primates, also humans.
Ish.
They're building a road, and other people, not the locals, are protesting it and bringing out hundreds of people to block construction.
Wait, have you already? Do you already know this one, Justin?
No, oh, I'm okay. Just saying what we've put together okay. So far, which is jackass.
Okay, well then, in this case, I guess. I was trying to nibble around the edges, but we got to know, like, the creatures that they're protecting are definitely alive, right?
Sure.
Spiritually, Brian, we're all alive in the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah.
Not in the United States, so it's not like they're protecting Sasquatches. I suspect it's a mythical creature, or is it a Sasquatch? You said not in the United States. Is it? Okay, I'm going to go with it's in Canada and they're afraid they're disturbing a Sasquatch.
No, Brian, that's ridiculous.
Damn.
Oh, it's a Wendigo.
What about you, Justin? Where's your head at?
Oh, man. I would say that it is in Japan. And they are trying to save a Sasquatch.
They're trying to save. They're trying to save face in Japan because their honor has been.
I'm going
to
give you a country which may narrow it down considerably.
All right.
Okay.
Iceland.
I'm glad you used the word may.
It just depends on how much you know about. Belief
Icelandic myth.
I want it. You know what's funny is instantly I'm like Julian Assange. That's who they're protecting.
You must know that Sasquatch is real.
We have documents from Sasquatch literature.
We have released documents about Sasquatch to the world.
All right. Problem is, in Iceland, they want
the Sasquatch. I'm Julian Assange.
He's here in the apartment with me.
That's like what do we know is run out of things to release.
People say our love not real. They're lying. We have documents of love.
We have many pictures for which we have released on the internet.
All right.
All right.
You ready?
Yes.
In Iceland, they're trying to build a road project. The problem is elves.
No!
Why is it always the elves?
So there are people, and you got to sense it about Iceland. There's not a lot to do there. And when they do surveys of people asking them about belief in elves, it comes back to University of Iceland found that 62% of 1,000 respondents thought it was least possible that elves existed.
Wow.
So
all of a sudden, the whole zoologists would say definitely a primate and human-ish. And like all of a sudden, this is that Inception moment where we're like, oh, it makes sense now.
And the problem is when you try to where do the, in folklore, where do the elves come from? And so according to one folktale, the origin of the hidden people can be traced to Adam and Eve. This is from Wikipedia. Eve hid her dirty, unwashed children from God and lied about their existence. God then declared, what man hides from God, God will hide from man.
Oh, so that's the reason that they're there, but you can't see them.
Another origin says that they're the children from Lilith or the fallen angels condemned to live between heaven and hell.
Man, you know what's funny is I don't think I've ever thought about elves as a supernatural being in our world. Like, to me, they've only been that Lord of the Rings part of... I've never pictured them outside of those mythical ecosystems that you picture them in.
So, I always just thought of them as, like they were, just hipster Eskimos.
You know, we brought the world's attention to the goblin problem plaguing Africa.
It's a fair point.
When other people wouldn't pay attention, and Justin, Brian, and Andrew for Africa goblins. You may remember our song we did and the campaign we did to bring awareness to that, which we'll do an update maybe in the next episode.
Stop the goblins from raping!
Goblins! Shepherds across Africa.
Now there's this, you know, here in Iceland, we have elves, and it's interesting because you start talking to people and they'll have these little folk stories. Oh, my grandmother said the elf stole her scissors. And
you know, of course. I guess
stole her scissors. They asked this person who's an environmentalist his thoughts on, you know, his concern was this road would cut through a lava field, which, yeah, talk about a problem. road through lava.
Wait a minute.
Whose idea is that? That's dumb. But he says, some feel the elf thing is a bit annoying, said Magnuson, adding that personally, he was not sure they existed. However, he added, I got married in a church with a god just as invisible as the elves. So what might seem irrational is actually quite common.
Wow. Is this all like a metaphor? Is this like when they did a survey of the British of what their religion was and all the atheists and agnostics just listed Jedi and so many of them did it that it became like it started showing up on forms? Do you think they're playing a game?
No, I think that this is something where like there is just a cultural idea about elves there, that there's a lot of like Andrew said, between the ingredients of boredom and wooded areas and it being so cold that you don't want to leave your house, there is this seed of like, I don't know. Yeah, sure. Invisible elves are running around the woods and we shouldn't build, or at least maybe it's not like we shouldn't. It's just there's enough people there that it's like somebody's like, yo, like we're going to go protest this road for elf, rights. And, you know, a cute girl says that she's going to do it. And then 8 guys that want to hook up with her say, yeah, we're coming too.
So you're saying like we could trace it all back to like 3 really hot chicks. And then
there
that's
are
the cause.
3 chicks in Iceland that are really hot and are completely the linchpin for this entire elven rights protest.
I can tell you one promoter of them, Bjork.
Really?
When she was on Colbert, he asked her about the belief in elves, and she said, well, we do believe. She said, it's sort of a relationship with nature, like with rocks. The elves all live in the rocks, so you have to. It's all about respect, you know?
Number one, anybody who goes to Bjork for clarification on anything is really digging their own grave. Anybody who has listened to Bjork music, like I, and there's an element of me that enjoys Bjork's music. I enjoy Bjork as a personality. She is a part of the rich quilt of music and culture worldwide. However, if you are asking her whether or not she believes in elves and you think the answer is anything other than of course, then you are crazy. You are crazier than her for believing in elves.
I'm just glad that we're the ones to expose her pro-elf agenda.
Yeah. Well, apparently, listen, elves may be a bit of a threat. There are many Icelandic folktales about elves and hidden people invading Icelandic farmhouses during Christmas and holding wild parties.
Yeah.
I feel like elves are just Iceland's collective, alibi, right?
Oh no!
Like,
I mean, it's a code
word. My child support check got torn up by elves in the mail.
It's a code word for teenagers, right? Like, who was drinking these beers last night? Must have been the elves.
Yeah. Dad parked his car on the lawn. Must have been the elves.
The elves.
Man. What would the cultural equivalent for that be in America? If we're right about cover, like just
gotta
elves
be
in
ghosts,
general,
right?
I mean, yeah,
what ghosts are to abandoned houses,
elves are
would be to the woodland area,
to drunken teenagers. Yes.
I mean, would that be, I mean, is that on the same planet?
Yeah, but it's like nobody uses ghosts as an excuse. I'm trying to think of something that's all I don't know. Like I feel like there's some things that are almost like cultural constructs. Like and I'm sure I'm going to piss someone off, but like the way everyone talks about chronic fatigue syndrome or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'd be one of those some medical condition or something to be like, sorry, I flaked.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Bill Keane liked to call her. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. Gentlemen, you ready for more weird?
I'll tell you what. I'll say that this episode is brought to you by facebook.com/ what's the official
don't
Facebook?
Trust Andrew Main. Facebook.com/ don't trust Andrew Main is
okay,
where you want to go. M-A-Y-N-E.
Yeah.
Go. Like.
Yeah. Facebook.com/AndrewMaine. You can like me too. I'll like you back.
Hey.
That's so this holiday season, you know, spend a lot of money going out there buying presents and stuff for people. Sometimes maybe you buy a present for yourself. Mm-hmm. I know I bought myself an iPad Air. Enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. Not the only one, a little tech crazy. Those scamps at Google decided to open up their pocketbooks, make a few purchases, and seems like they were on a theme here.
Yeah. They purchased Boston Dynamics. If you have not seen the YouTube videos of Boston Dynamics creations, they are in fact amazing, and many would, you know, not just, you know, crazy speculators like us who talk about elves in Iceland, but like real people who understand the future of military science say that their creations bear a striking resemblance to what the future of modern warfare will look like.
They didn't just buy Boston Dynamics, Justin. They bought 8 robot companies.
What?
Yeah, and that was probably the most popular, but yeah, no, a huge cadre of them.
And by the way, Boston Dynamics it's called Petman, right? That's the one where you'll see a bipedal robot, a kind of a proto Terminator walking
on
it. Well,
yeah, Big Dog is the one that is running through the terrain.
Right.
But for our audio listeners,
Petman is the one that has like the bipedal, you know,
the strut.
Yeah, Saturday Night Fever strut on the treadmill. You know, I think it is a cynical although humorous comment that I don't think paints the whole picture. Slogans through the years.
Hang on. We just had another one of those weird hiccups at...
That's fine. We'll just keep rolling.
All right.
So it was Google's, slogans through the years. Don't be evil.
Right.
Evil is hard to quantify, and we make military robots.
Now, okay, so what is... Google's in a weird space where they're of course, their core competency, what makes the money, what gets them... their stock valuation is the fact that they sell ads. They're an advertiser, right?
World's largest advertising company.
Yeah. Advertiser, but then you've got, and keep in mind, you know, these are noble things that are happening, but they're not money-making things or theoretically not immediately money-making things like the Google self-driving car, which, you know, granted, I'm very, very excited about, and I'm glad to see them invest the time and effort and money in there. Consumer products, I guess, you know, Android launched as the free open source operating system for mobile devices, and you got Chrome OS or whatever.
And well, it's like it is Andy Rubin who is the reason why Android is named Android, is because Andy Rubin was obsessed with robotics, and he is now in charge of Google's Android division, which purchased these companies. It is under his leadership that these companies are falling under.
Well, that changes things. If there's one crazy robot obsessed individual and now he's been given the keys to the kingdom and he's like, replicants, we need replicants.
Yeah. I mean, they put one singularity obsessed guy, Ray Kurzweil.
Yeah.
In charge of, you know, some of their far out ventures. And now they've got Ruben in charge of robots and 8 companies there. And they want the group that just won the DARPA challenge, this Japanese group, who had their upright walking robot, you know, which Google bought them. I mean, they've got some amazing brain power. And I think that's kind of what they're doing. I think they're going to let these companies maybe pursue their own ways, but then maybe put some of that brain power together, let some people solve some problems, focus on others. What is the future? Where are they going with this? What do they want to have happen?
Man, I don't even know, because the problem is, you know, we don't have the benefit of hindsight. I'm sure that there looked to be some incredibly forward-looking brain trusts that were made by, you know, steel barons, I don't know, 150 years ago or whatever, that just look utterly ridiculous in retrospect. Like, what were you guys thinking? You know, you'd have people get obsessed with the occult and researching spiritualism or whatever. Like, who's to say?
Like Hitler's famed obsession with the Ark of the Covenant.
Exactly. Well, I mean, certainly the spirit of that, right? But it's like, who's to say that it's easy for me to get swept up in the optimism of this kind of stuff. Like, wow, Google's a forward-thinking company, and they've got so much money they can afford to try to make some amazing magic happen. And they're going to give me cars that drive themselves and robots to do my dishes and whatnot. But then, like, there's another part of me that 20 years from now can totally picture just cackling with laughter at the idiocy of thinking that and how much money got wasted because it couldn't be done or couldn't be done the right way.
But I mean, we wouldn't be cackling. I mean, we know that you don't know what bet to make. You have to make a bunch of bets. For a little insight, Eric Schmidt, I guess he was asked to comment on, you know, the Amazon drone idea that they wanted to use drones to do the delivery.
The Prime
and Schmidt's
Air.
Like, I don't know about that. And he says, you know, and where the Google vision is, a Google robot car pulling up to your front door and a robot walking out up to your door and handing you a package. It's like, yeah, that's not scary either.
I guess it is more conventional.
Santa Connor.
Yeah.
Have you seen this receipt and a deal? I think in the short term, obviously, like you said, Brian, the goose that lays the golden eggs for Google is AdWords. However, a lot of the companies that they purchased their prime way of making money is research contracts with the military and looking at themselves as getting into the military contractor space is something that I think, you know, you can't really gloss over, especially in an era of, you know, what we've seen with the NSA. And I'm not saying that everything is connected, and I'm not saying that necessarily them getting in, selling stuff to, the government in terms of this robotics stuff necessarily equates to them being more pliant in terms of the information that we give to them. But it is something interesting to look forward to. And I know that, you know, Google, from any research that you do on them, is very cognizant of the fact that, hey, listen, AdWords could soften going forward. You know, it could soften in the next 5 to 10 years. Now all of a sudden we're in a far different place. So let's put our feelers out to every possible place we think the future is. So when that shift happens, we are prepared.
Well, and to be honest, I think it's a smart strategy, because that's what you do is, like, once you've gotten lucky, and let's just call it luck. I mean, yes, they have good technology or whatever, but they hit the right space in the right market at the right time with the right, you know, internet culture or whatever. And they did very, very well. And you can't, there's two strategies. You can either pretend that you will forever continue to make all the money thanks to AdWords being so perfect, or you could say, great, we did that. Let's diversify and go a different direction. So at that point, if you're going to diversify, you either wedge all that money and effort and talent into something that is stable and boring and relatively safe, or, and I think this is the strategy that they're doing, and I think it's a smart and exciting one, you double down and you just buy all the lottery tickets on every long shot science idea. You know, some of the investors, is Google directly putting money into the asteroid mining idea that we had talked about on?
No, I think into, Google people are just
right.
Yeah, I don't think, no, if it's Google directly.
Right.
You know, but Google has their own sort of, like, you know, the Google Lunar X Prize or whatever too that they have.
I guess my point is that if you're playing money and life as a real-time strategy game from above, then it's not a bad strategy to just buy all the long shots, because you only need one to pay off. That's what Hollywood does, right?
But what if this long shot is becoming Lockheed Martin? You know,
money still spends as good either way.
I think that, you know, companies that tend to succeed, what they do is they leverage their least expensive asset that has value elsewhere. Google knows how to build massive server systems, massive computing. Google can store your data cheaper than anybody else can store it. You know, Google can get your bits around the world cheaper than anybody else can get it. Google can do computation cheaper than anybody else can do it. And Google's very good at acquiring brains, at the smartest people in the world. And so they say, okay, we can have the smartest people in the world and we can solve the toughest computation problems in the world. So what are areas we can approach that? And they go, well, you know what? Self-driving cars are a computation problem and you need really smart people to do that. Boom, we're better to solve that than anybody else. Robotics, they go, okay, computation problem, brain problem. We have those resources. Boom, we'll go into there. And I think that's what they're choosing, is the things they know where being the best at computation, the best at attracting brains will help them do it. You know, Apple says, you know, we make great user interfaces. We think we understand how to make a product top to bottom, easy for users. So we're going to go after the consumer market and really push out consumer products to do that. First computers, then iPhones, then iPads and devices like that. And that's sort of their direction, you know, where Google says, we solve computation. We've got fantastic voice recognition, other things that Apple has resources, doesn't quite do it on the parity that Google does, you know, because of, you know, Google's core thing is massive computation. So,
I guess the question is, let's cut to the quick is all we care about is it going to be good or bad? And I suspect that it'll be good. I mean, I don't actually think we're going to be dominated by robot overlords or used as military devices. The only question is whether or not it'll be gross, like just icky with covered in ads and.
Well, but it might be, you know, they create a services thing where, you know, what happens when you go to a fast food restaurant and you see the person making your taco is a robot? You know, they're
good. Those are cleaner hands than I'll get with a human.
I'm for it. You're for it. But when you're the person who says that could have been a human doing that job.
Oh, man. All right.
Hey, Durker Germs.
If you are the kind of person who thinks that, first of all, you're wrong. There's nothing so great. Nobody gets up in the morning saying, I'm super thankful that I get to make a taco today. Like, people want to do more interesting jobs.
You looked at the actual real unemployment rate in this country right now, Brian?
Fine. It's high. Whatever. I don't care. It's the point.
You heard it here first, folks.
Brian doesn't care about the unemployed.
Yeah.
Is Brian Brushwood say about the unemployed? Okay. It's high.
Don't care.
I would love it
doesn't
if I ran.
Doesn't care on jobs. Doesn't care on Julian Assange's love of Bigfoot. Brian Brushwood, wrong for America, wrong for elves.
my point is there's a great article on Wired about the stages you go through as you realize that robots are going to do all your job. And they break it down. Like, the first stage is like, a robot can never do my job. And then it's like, and then the second stage is like, well, maybe it can do my job, but it can't do it as well as me. And then the third stage is like, damn, robots took our jobs. And then the fourth stage is, I'm so thankful that a robot took my job because my new job is so much more interesting and I don't have to do the parts of the job that I hated because robots are doing it.
You're assuming many people get to part four.
I am.
And look at now again, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate here.
That's fine.
Yeah.
No,
I'm
really excited that Wired, a print magazine, is printing out the stages in which you accept your irrelevance in certain fields.
Well, which they're doing. Let me find the right keywords to find this. Go ahead.
So let's use outsourcing in the reaction to that. Outsourcing, the ability to use cheaper labor to do things, I think is a fantastic thing. It's a wonderful thing from the economy. Point to the economists to look at this. I feel the same way about robotics. You know, people worry about the cut jobs that go overseas. Jobs are lost through technology, far outstrip that because they just leave the planet. And they never came back. You can't go backwards. You need to go forward.
Sure.
There is a mentality that when you're minimally skilled, we use that term, the problem is you're at the bottom because for whatever reason, maybe there is no aspiration to become higher skilled. Maybe there's things preventing you from doing that. Those are, you know, we have a ridiculously high unemployment rate. When you look at actual unemployment, it is really, it's like 99, 95 million people in this country don't have jobs.
Right.
Because for whatever reasons, it's hard to fit them into.
Well, and don't forget being underemployed as well. Someone who has like a bachelor's and, you know, whatever, and then they're working at Starbucks because they need something.
I think the path forward is embracing these things and embracing, you know, we have wonderful technologies that allow you to acquire skills, et cetera. And the thing that surprises me the most when I talk to people kind of online, offline about who are between jobs or things like that, and I would say many of them are underskilled and they don't seek out new skills, which I would say, and that's not everybody's problem, but I say it's a lot of the problem. You know, like, well, I want to do this, and you can be comfortable kind of doing nothing in many cases and that's a hard one.
That's one of the things that that Mike Rowe of Dirty Jobs fame talks about. And in fact, he just did this big 40-minute interview with Reason.com talking about his foundation, which is basically to advocate going out and learning a trade. Not to take a dump on colleges or whatever. He said college is great, but the problem is that there's this default idea that you go to college and you get a magical white collar job, and that's what everyone needs to do. Meanwhile, there's a welder who can, if you're a welder in Ohio, you can make $100 an hour and work as much as you feel like working for as long as you feel like working. And there are important jobs that aren't being done. And what's funny is like, to bring it back to our discussion about robots, like those jobs are jobs that right now we need people to do. But let's say someone makes a welding robot or whatever, then they're going to need somebody to handle managing a team of 12 robot welders and hand out there. It's like there's always going to be something that you need to
and
do.
And boy, are they lazier than a pack of sleeping dogs.
And yeah, don't turn your back on them either.
You know, if you know how to run a CNC machine right now, incredibly required job that you don't need to have a 4-year degree in English lit to do. You need to be skilled to do it. And 5-6 years from now, there's going to be, can you run a 3D printer? Can you do these things? And these skills, you know, can be acquired, et cetera. But there is that hesitancy, the idea that why aren't the skills I have right now of value? And well, we can pretend they're valuable and inflate the idea that they're valuable, but the end of the day is, Google's going to make a robot that's going to do your job.
God, man, that's the weird part. That's the part that kind of breaks my heart, because we all want to believe that we could do anything you want. But at the end of the day, we're all ants in a hive, and it's not up to us what skills are important to the rest of the hive. Because money is a reflection of the value you bring to the larger body. And if the hive doesn't want a horse buggy operator, then you're not going to make a lot of money operating your horse buggy.
But, you know, we live in a society where skills are so now more than ever easily learned and honed. And it is, you are close. Not to say it's always easy and there's not hurdles, right? Because there certainly are. And many of them are based on, you know, factors that are outside of your control based on where you're born, who you're born to, yada, yada, yada. Right.
Right.
But it is now the membrane between that has never been thinner to learn new skills and apply them somewhere. And if we can't do it, not only in the Western world, but America specifically, then like you are in the most advantageous position to do that here compared to any other point in time and really most other places in the world, like currently.
Man,
so
if there's an upside to the fact that like certain things are changing, right? Like our parents' generation had the idea that you worked hard, you got into a company and you stayed with that company for 40, 50 years, you got a gold watch at the end and then collected a pension. And of course, nowadays,
and then we're ground into nutrients and fed to the newborn.
Exactly. Whereas nowadays there's this culture of like, no, you're going to have a few jobs, you're going to do one thing for a while and switch to another. My gut says, and I can't recall any evidence to back this up. My gut says is that we're all built to be taking on tasks and new challenges. And I would imagine a life where you jump around from job to job and are constantly learning and developing and excited about the next new thing you do is a better world than, or is a happier, that kind of person seems to me would be happier than the kind of person who spends his whole life worried about whether or not a robot's going to take his job pulling a lever once a day, you know? I don't know. I mean, that's just, this is me.
Yeah. So there you have it. Brian doesn't care.
By the way, just Google wired robots take our jobs. And the title of the article is Better Than Human, Why Robots Will and Must Take Our Jobs. And it opens with the curious question of, what would happen if overnight 70% of American workers suddenly lost their job? And essentially saying by the end of the century, that's going to happen because it already happened before. 200 years ago, 70% of American people were farmers. And then, boom, it's all done by robots and driving stuff. So,
by the way, you want to know what I would not surprise me in the least if tomorrow it was revealed that a robot was doing the job to the point to great success, and we just didn't know. It was horse ebooks, BuzzFeed.
Yes.
If BuzzFeed was revealed tomorrow as they just typed in a bunch of like they it was a robot that crawled the zeitgeist of what people like, oh, Disney princesses, food, you know, like, and it was just a headline generator and then GIF metadata and just lists. I would not be shocked in the least.
Somebody did that at the MIT Comedy Hack Day or Hack Fest or whatever. Baratunde Thurston was one of the team that did that, and they created something called Clicksterbait, CLICKSTRBAIT.com, I think, Clicksterbait.com. And what it does is it just manufactures automatically clickbait headlines and takes like a bunch of clip art. It's so like, here, they fired him for being himself, but it's something my kids knew. And it's like, you just want to know what that article is. He lived through something you wouldn't believe. And Eritreans will thank you for watching. This is seriously disturbing, but sorry, guys. This is one thing you don't know, coupled with a stock photo of Christ and his cross.
I like that a stock photo of Christ and his cross and not a stock photo from a film of Christ and his
cross. Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
No, I don't think it's actually a photo of Christ and his cross. I'm going to go out on a limb.
No, yeah.
Here's a photo of Morpheus saying, Africans have been demanding it, and it's revolutionizing love. And then you just got a picture of like of Guy Fieri saying big birthday controversy, and then a photo of
the cat died instantly in quotes.
New breasts, sad Keanu Reeves. It says new breasts.
Seriously, Fox News. Anyway, I guess what I'm saying is like yes. That's I, no, I think
and
you're
I would
100%
say take
right.
That out. Do the whole BuzzFeed thing. Do the blog posts with the GIFs, man. I think you could totally do it.
It's the same photo of Christ, and it says, they fired him for being himself.
What he does now will amaze you.
Yeah, clicksterbait.com. It's pretty awesome. It's a pope. And it says, here's something no one wants to see, but women need to know about this.
It's the Pope. All right. I have one more for you.
All right.
I have a job offer for you.
Oh, yes. We'll take it. We're your guys.
Here's what you got to do. I need you to sit around, drink beer.
Okay. Nothing wrong with any of this. Sounds great.
There you go. Might start you with a little bit of beer first, and then I'm going to work your way up to more beer until I just push your tolerance as a beer.
Now, when you say tolerance, you mean like my liver. Can I handle it?
Yeah. No, not like, you know, until I'm trying to kill you.
Yeah, it's not beer. Like a Twilight Zone episode where it's like, no, Brian, you agreed to all the beer you can drink.
No, I'm not trying to kill you with beer. And then cocaine, I'm going to give you some coke, maybe. All right, some leaves, hey. You can chew it, it's medicinal.
Medicinal cocaine?
Yeah.
That was my favorite thing in Grand Theft Auto 5, by the way, were the posters that say Proposition like 22, legalized medicinal cocaine. sure. This is all legal. Why not? I'll try the cokes.
It's natural. It's nature's way of saying
it's
hello.
It's literally herbal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of the gig for the most part, really. You're just
drinking beer,
chill out, drink some beer, lines. You know,
and this is legal. This is legal.
Yeah.
Like, you seem uncomfortable with that idea. Hey, just promise me nobody's the fuzz ain't gonna come in and ruin.
Oh no,
my fun.
No.
All right. Well, if
they
there's
encourage
no
reason, it. Actually.
How much do we get paid? Is this a living wage or is this like some side money?
You know, it's more like you're taking care of everything you need, your food, your booze, your coke. You really don't have to want for anything, really.
I mean, I'd say it sounds like we'll be lab monkeys, but I guess literally that's what they do with lab monkeys, don't they? Don't they wire up brains and have monkeys press buttons?
It's not really science thing, and you get free booze and coke for the rest of your life.
Hold on, wait, it's not a science thing? We just So we don't even have to like to show up at a time and be poked and prodded.
No, I mean you get housing,
dude. Okay,
This is a so, but are we allowed to see anybody? Like, do we get to live lives, or is it just getting drunk and pumped up on tutors?
I mean, yeah, you might see some friends and see some people, I think.
But wait, will they be on? Are we sequestered? Is it a campus of some sort?
Yeah, sort of, you know.
Is it okay? I don't normally jump to the bit, but to me, this picture is like, it sounds like a prison where somebody is just like, screw it, just let them get as high as they want if that's what they want to do.
I don't know if I'd call it a prison.
So, like a campus, you would call it?
Yeah, sure.
Do I have to move there, or can I live where I live and commute?
No, you'll have to live there, probably.
Do I get internet access?
I mean, I think there's one important point where you have to show up. Other than that, they might be kind of loose, you know? Might be like, yeah, it's cool, just chill out here or whatever, that's fine. It might be kind of cool.
Do I have freedom of communication? Can I reach out to anyone that I feel like?
Probably, but you're going to be pretty high.
Is there how much sobriety time do I have, or do I have none?
It kind of probably diminishes from the moment you start this.
So I am from the moment that I step on campus, I am going to spend my time increasingly more inebriated as we go forward.
Yes, that will be the most sober I've ever been. College experience.
Hold on. I just thought of a hiccup here. Does this mean that like, will there, is this an engagement until when? Like for how long?
Rest of your life.
Till I die. So like I pretty much am on the path to never be sober again.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
You're not going to die from this though. The beer and the Coke, it's not going to.
That won't be so what
I
takes me.
I live to a ripe old age.
Define ripe.
relatively, like it's not like this is a two
human week. Average. The human, do I get to live to the human average?
I would decidedly say no.
Okay, so I will be committing to dying early statistically.
Well, I mean,
do I get to have a wife or kids or girlfriend or any kind of relations like that?
No, you do not.
Okay, so I am completely cut off from any kind of romantic interaction at all, including family building. So I'm committing myself to dying early, drunk and high, without any love.
Yeah, but you're forgetting the part where you get to be drunk and high the entire time.
Starting to sound like more of a prison than it is a fun job.
You'll be very drunk and very high, however.
This sounds like the promise that is made to fresh-faced young boys who come off the bus in Los Angeles by powerful Hollywood executives.
Fool me once.
Yeah, I guess that's, you know, obviously, you know, I got the wife and three kids, so it's like I'm not going to walk away from that. Though it sounds like I get to get really drunk and really high.
Would you maybe volunteer your children for it?
No. What's the man?
This is legal.
This is a real thing.
This is legal.
Legal. Legal, man. What's with the questions?
What are you, a cop? Legal?
It's necessary, man. It's encouraged. It is the law, in fact.
Wait, it's the law?
In a place.
And this is a real place, not like you're like, and that book is Brave New World.
No, it's a real place. Wow. It's a real thing.
Okay. This does sound like some kind of Faustian bargain, doesn't it?
I mean, but unlike the Faustian bargain, well, I guess Faust knew the bargain to begin with, but like you already know, we already know what we're signing up for if we go in.
Yeah, you're like, oh yeah, I'm down with that. Sure.
Man. But it's like, you get you in on the one that you're like, what do you love to do? Well, I like to do two things, snort lines, drink beer. And they're like, well, congratulations. We're going to pay you to do that for the rest of your life. And they're like, yeah, all right. And then they do. And then wherever this is, they are rushing. In fact, somebody right now is listening to this podcast and saying, like, listening to me say those two things, going like, yep, that's me. Yep, that's me. And then Andrew's going to reveal that this is a real place and they're going to run there.
Well, it's a place they kind of don't do this anymore.
Ah, well, then they're going to get into a time machine and go back to that moment.
Yeah. Well, was this in America?
Yes.
Oh, I tell you, that's my favorite response to one of these obvious black or white questions is like the fact that you're hesitating and having difficulty makes me all the more intrigued. Like,
when you say America,
I mean, I guess what I'm thinking of is it like I guess I could picture a fictionalized version of America versus the real America. I don't know.
Again, when you say America,
is it the Americas?
The United States.
Like North and South America.
Okay, fair enough. Sure. I actually meant the United States of America,
no,
but it's not.
It's not.
Okay. Man, I got to know where this place is. And you're saying it's not a scientific study. They weren't trying to figure something out.
Nah, pretty much not.
What would they... Now, this is one of the things that I was wondering about. What? Put a pin in this. Is there a reason that we shouldn't just give lots of drugs to prisoners in prisons across the United States?
Not at all. Not at all. No reason not to at all.
I mean, it's like they would be more docile. They would not cause trouble for the guards. They'd still do their time, but they would stop stabbing each other.
What are you talking about?
Back to this.
All right. Like what I'm saying is I don't know.
Number one, we medicate prisoners all the time.
Yeah.
Like that. That is something that happened. Like, you know, in pill form, like the state gives pills to prisoners. Are you talking about like getting them high, like fogging out a prison?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go.
That's exactly what I'm saying. All right.
The cost and medical issues of that are separate. Let's get back to this.
All right. I will not sign up for it. And it sounds like Justin's not so hot on it either.
No.
All right. Fine. Be that way, guys.
Uh-oh. Oh, wait, there you're back. We're having magical internet issues. Keep going.
So, you know, when I'm going to use a phrase, and it tends to have a very negative connotation. Human sacrifice.
Oh, Jesus.
See, there you go. With the negativity, Brian.
Okay, so I guess they did human sacrifices by just letting people get blissed out of their mind?
No, they did not. They didn't kill him from getting blissed, Brian. They did not kill him. I'm told. I was emphatic about that. It was not how they killed them.
They killed them from stabbing them and cutting out their hearts.
Okay. Not in this case. Okay. In this particular Inca culture,
okay,
they did not stab you and cut out your heart.
Okay.
As they did in other Inca cultures with human sacrifices and young children.
Right. Right.
This one was a very humane form of human sacrifice for the sacrificial harvest ritual called Kapokokocha, kind of like Coachella, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Outkast is headlining this year.
So they you take
as high as you want.
Right? Takes 12-year-old, 13-year-old, make sure they're virgin, or maiden, as they call them. Get them drunk. Maybe let them start a year before getting drunk, getting high, weed, whatever.
They already know. They know, like, this is my job. So I'm gonna get.
Yeah, they're probably like thrilled. They're like, hey, guess what, guys? I got chosen. They're like,
yeah.
Oh my god,
no
dude,
work
you did.
Out
You're
in the
so
field
lucky.
For me.
Now,
I'm getting blazed.
Did the Incans? And forgive me if I'm asking something you don't know. Like, did they believe that they were chosen and going into some super rad afterlife, or they're like, no, it's gonna suck. You're gonna die, and the gods will be pleased by it.
I don't know. I mean, I think that maybe this was one of the, like, hey, this is a cool ones, rather than like when you sacrifice, like, you know, your enemies. So this is the way they would sacrifice. You'd spend about a year getting stoned on cocoa leaves and corn beer. Apparently there's corn beer. Who knew? And then when it's your time, they just lead you up up the volcano, the 22,000-foot volcano, and
they just push you in?
No, nope. They just push you in a little hole in the ground in the volcano, and you froze to death. We know this because when we've gone to the top of this volcano, we find a lot of holes in the ground with frozen children.
Oh, jeez.
And then when we look at the tissue, we find, these kids were drunk. Like, these kids were drunk for a while, and there's cocoa here. Like, these kids are eating cocaine. There's a kind of a crazy ritual.
So basically, this was a ritualized version of sacrifice, of something that you will read in newspapers, especially in rural cold areas of this country and many, many others, where people just get way too drunk or way too high and wind up, you know, falling asleep in their car or falling asleep outside or something like that and wind up just freezing to death. Like, that was, it was a ritualized version of those tragedies that happen in the modern era.
Man, I'll tell you what, it's, that's difficult. It's become difficult for me to wrap my mind around. When I was a teenager, you read like, crazy Incans did human sacrifices every day so that the sun would shine every time. And you're like, wow, that's thousands of, you know, men, women, and children who were killed. That's odd. But then it's like you have kids and you're like you picture what kind of world is one in which somebody has a kid and just shrugs and be like, well, I guess it's time to make the sun rise. So long, Junior. It's become difficult. Now that I have experienced the joys of being a father, that to wrap my mind around that.
You want to know what kind of world, Brian? A world where the voices are limited, the influences of those said voices are magnified, and one without basic cable for which they can watch Don't Trust Andrew Maine, January 13th, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Two episodes debuting on January 13th, facebook.com/Don't Trust Andrew Maine.
For the inedible questions about where else can you watch it, it should be available on iTunes. You can go to the A&E site online. You can get the app for your Android, for your iPhone, and for your Roku.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, just if you are listening, you haven't listened to this before the debut or anytime during Monday, we will certainly all be tweeting about it. It does help if you are watching along and tweeting to let people know that you're watching it. It's good for the show. It's good for Andrew. It's good for Weird Things. It's good for everything.
You guys ready to do some picks?
Hell yeah.
Heck yeah.
Picks. Nobody seemed at all excited about a pick. Nobody seemed enthusiastic.
Okay, all right, fine. I'll go. I didn't want to jump the line. And
Oh my God. Can I go, guys?
Okay, so this is, you know, a lot of times when you run across something that you like a lot, you end up being late to the party. And the only reason you know about it is because five of your friends have talked about it. For example, the fantastic new show, Don't Trust Andrew Maine, premiering tomorrow on A&E. But in this case, this was a weird hiccup on Twitter where I just ran into someone who asked, like, who I started following because his follows look sufficiently geeky that I thought he might be a Scam School fan. But then he's like, oh, yeah, so how did you run across my comic? I was like, you got a comic? Let me take a look. And I went to it's basiccomic.com, B-A-S-I-C. Basic comic. There's two C's in there, basiccomic.com. And it's a weekly comic strip, I guess you would say, web comic that the art is gorgeous. It is well produced and it is utterly and fantastically charming. It's a guy who works at a computer company who takes a little holiday and runs across a giant 12-foot-tall sentient robot who happens to speak all of his emotions and in basic, basically. So, you know, when he runs across him, it says, the first thing the robot says is input name dollar sign. And this guy says, I'm sorry, that's basic, isn't it? And so the guy responds by saying, you know, let name dollar sign equals basic. If time less than 12, then print good morning. Unit name equals name dollar sign basic. And so, like, by saying that's basic, isn't it? He accidentally names the robot, and the robot, you know, is like, well, what are you here for? What do you want to do? And the robot says, you know, print basic, let enjoying $ equals looking plus at $ the fish. And it only gets weirder and more awesome from there. The art is very whimsical. It is charming and British as hell. The next frame you see is of this guy and the robot basic playing essentially hide and seek. He ends up going to where the robot came from, where he discovers an ongoing war between pirates and ninjas. It is so charming and adorable and geeky, and it's challenging. I like it because it's to even understand what the robot's expressing, you got to kind of think like a programmer and kind of feel out. You're like, oh, I get it. He means this. I utterly love it. It's very rarely out of nowhere with no social proof do I come across an artifact that is relatively undiscovered. This guy's been doing it for 2 years, weekly comics. So there's about 120 pages of it right now at basiccomic.com.
I'm looking. It looks great. I love the format. I love the use of the medium. It looks just neat. Very cool.
Super rad.
I have a pick.
Yeah.
Go.
And it's kind of a touchback, and I think something Justin picked maybe just an episode or two ago. And I figured, you know what? I'd dip into this again because it'd been forever since I read it. I thought I'd try the audiobook version of it. And really grooving it. At the Mountains of Madness.
I've never read that.
Yeah.
Is that an H.P. Lovecraft thing? What is that?
Yeah, it's an H.P. Lovecraft. It's been Guillermo del Toro was trying to make that into a film. It's about an Antarctic expedition, which something goes horribly wrong. And the reading of it is by, I want to say, Edward Pressman, who's a well-known actor, really accomplished actor. Yeah. By Edward Herman. Pardon me. Edward Herman does a great, great reading of it. And, you could buy it for like, it was just like $2 or something on, so I just used like a credit. I didn't even use a credit. I just used a coupon to buy that. It is what's great about it. It's Lovecraft kind of working at his best. And what's neat about it is he details this Antarctic expedition as they go through there. And I haven't read this in ages. And so listening to the audiobook, I'm pausing it and I'm pulling up Wikipedia and I'm looking up Antarctic geology. I'm looking up, you know, the history of it. And this was something written 100 years ago and pretty fun so far. So I'm at the, you know, I know, you know, it goes awfully, you know, obviously we're at the point where it's starting to get into very Lovecraft territory, but it's a really enjoyable read, now, I think, or listen.
Antarctica was fairly big news 100 years ago. Like, I wonder if it was much more present. I guess there's sort of a modern understanding of Mars that I would imagine is roughly parallel to the modern understanding of Antarctica at the time.
Well, you know, this is a continent that's twice the size of Australia. You know, 95% of it's covered with a mile thick ice sheet.
Yeah.
We've only been able to explore tiny, tiny bits of it. We've been able to look for fossils in areas that are close to the ice shelves or the coastal lines and some of the mountain areas. You know, there's one dinosaur area there where you find things as big as T-Rex and other creatures there that their own sort of their Antarctic analogs. It's been largely covered in.
We're having a internet hiccup right now. So you were saying it's largely covered in what?
Covered in ice for the last 30 million years. But up until then, you know, it was continent filled and teeming with life, and then 30 million years ago just started progressively to ice over. But I mean, it's an amazing place to think about. We don't know what's there. We really know so little about what's there. You know, there's only 4,000 people right now on the, you know, continent, and the amount to explore. And you know, we've held off when we think about, like, oh, we're running out of this, we're running out of that. Nobody ever talks about, well, hey, let's go take a look at what's in Antarctica, you know, what's there. And we're not running out of stuff. We don't need to do that yet. But this, you know, I kind of think before we exploit Mars, why not Antarctica?
Well, it does seem like, I guess there are two things. First of all, there's the physical barrier, the difficulty of working in that cold of an environment. But of course, that would be a good middle ground analog to go to Mars. But mainly there's the legal entanglement in that, you know, we have treaties, international treaties of like not exploiting that territory. But again, I guess that also is exactly the way it would be with Mars, because we also have treaties saying that we won't exploit, you know, interstellar resources.
2048,
Brian, to your point, the fervor for exploration at that time is, I think, evident in that story. You know, part of the motivation for the central character, without getting into it on why he is writing what he is writing, is about in that culture of exploration and documentation, and that's very much a part of the central narrative.
Awesome.
So that's my pick.
All right, I got a game I've been playing a whole hell of a lot of. It is old, and apparently the sequel is coming soon. But it is called, it's on iOS. I'm not sure if it's on Android. It's called Battle Heart. It is a real-time fantasy game. So it is very much here. I'm going to show it right here. Basically, you select your team, you level up, you fight monsters. Each of your different characters kind of have different abilities. It is addicting. It's fun to play on the phone. You just, zap away hours of a flight, going through all these inventive little worlds and shooting magic and, swinging swords and leveling up your barbarian and all the fun stuff that we, all the fun tropes that we've all come to know and love in RPG and real-time strategy games and stuff like that. So it's super awesome. It's Battle Heart.
Two things. Okay, first of all, I'm looking at the style now. It's awesome and cartoony. It is available on Android because, I'm constantly shopping for a new time killer for when you're on the road on there. And I guess it's the format is real-time strategy or role-playing.
Yeah. So, it's basically each level is, you bring your four adventurers into the field. Monsters come in waves. Some of them are more boss-like. Some of them are more, just kind of henchmen, and you clear through them, you level up. And then I guess like the evergreen element of it are for each board of locales, there's an arena that you can get the best possible power-ups, where it is just endless and you just see how far you can survive with your adventures. But
that's the mechanic that has me so addicted to Orcs Must Die too, is this, you build traps and there's this onflowing of orcs coming in that you create Rube Goldberg things to set them on fire, then fling them and do X, Y, and Z. But they have this endless mode where it's one of those stay alive, keep using the power-ups as long as you can, construct these elements to make it all happen. I'm definitely going to give this a try.
Yeah, I was shocked at how easy it was to play on the iPhone. I would assume on the iPad it would be even easier just because you have more of that real estate, but it was a fun thing to purchase, and it certainly killed some time on a flight.
Yeah.
Battle Heart. Cool.
I'm constantly deleting games on my phone.
And we've talked about this, and this is part of the magic of what makes Andrew Main such a wizard, a productive wizard of just like writing books and so on, is that you can't handle having an idle time waster because you'll just become obsessed with it.
So I will show you on my home screen. I don't know if I have, I do have some games in one of my folders here, but here, if you go to my home screen, you see the one thing I have on there that's not like a standard sort of app is Daedalus Touch,
yep,
which is the writing app I use now. It's a really, really great mobile writing solution for iOS. So I'm starting my next novella. I've been writing it in that. And then I use the desktop app Ulysses. So everything on here just syncs automatically to the desktop. So I can just pick up and start off where I left off. I'll write on my phone. I'll write a chapter on my phone if I'm waiting or whatever. And so it makes it easy to do.
Well, first of all, Justin and I have nothing but respect for you for being that productive and being that amazing. But at the end of the day, I think Justin and I will play Battle Heart while you write novellas.
It's all good, guys.
I feel like
I'll tell you what. I actually did use Daedalus on my flight back, and I wrote a YouTube script. So I think I'm going to do a YouTube video today because I just had an idea for one. But it is very intuitive. I highly recommend it. Andrew recommended it to me. There's a lot of really smart ideas with Daedalus that, like, you would think, you know, how good could an iOS word processing app be? And the answer is pretty friggin' good.
That's Daedalus, Daedalus or whatever, like the Greek. It's a Greek thing. Yeah,
it works.
It's a Greek freak.
The Greek DaedalusTouch.com, and then they have a Mac client called Ulysses. So what I just like is the starting at one here, picking up any iOS device, my iPad or whatever, and it's there.
Yeah, because it syncs through iCloud, right?
Yep.
Right on.
Rad butt.
Yeah, free. They have a paid upgrade thing. If you want to add some features to it, you pay, you know, it can be like $2.99 to get everything into it. So, gentlemen.
Yeah.
It's been a big monster podcast here.
Indeed.
I'm glad the gang's all together again. And congrats again on the launch of the show. I'm really excited to watch it.
Thank you. I'm excited too. Can't wait. So I guess we'll pull this to a close here. It's been unique.
No. You got to say the thing.
It's your one line that is written in stone. You got to say the one thing.
The podcast is not over till you say it.
We talked about a lot of strange stuff.
Strange stuff is my side project that I'm developing. You can't call it strange stuff.
All right. We've had an odd time.
No.
It's been uncanny, eerie, unnatural, supernatural, unearthly, otherworldly, ghostly, mysterious, strange, abnormal, unusual.
I feel so betrayed when I realize that he's opened a thesaurus. Like,
exactly what I did.
Say it.
I just typed in weird into Google and said, let me find what other words I could use. Because I just couldn't think of anything else to say besides it's been weird.
Don't!
Ah-ha!
Podcast over, suckers.
You just need to say it's been weird. So I can make out with Sasquatch.
That's weird, right?
I like to cuddle with Sasquatch, and we have documents to prove it.